Blog Talk Radio.
Are you looking to take your social technology strategies to the next level? Then do we have a show for you. Social Geek Radio co-hosts AK Stout and Deb Evans chat weekly with innovative technology folks who share their experiences, tips, and tricks to help you take your business to the next level. Social Geek Radio is brought to you by Saying It Social and Deb Evans Consulting, LLC. To learn more about their unique services, including but not limited to speaking, consulting, and training, visit AK Stout and DebEvansConsulting.com.
Well, hi there. It's Deb Evans coming to you from Houston, and I don't think I have an audio problem tonight. AK, do you hear anything?
It sounds good to me.
All right. So AK Stout coming live to us, and you are still in Baltimore this week. You're not traveling yet, correct?
Not yet. Still in Baltimore. 90s Baltimore. So if anybody wants 90-degree weather, please feel free to take it away from me.
I saw that. How bizarre. You have our weather and we have your weather. It dropped to the 40s tonight.
Let's trade back.
Yeah, Texas, it's not supposed to be that cold. So why don't we catch the audience up on what is going on, and you will be traveling, and you've got a couple of trips coming up.
Yeah, I actually just found out today that I'm going to be in Colorado next week to do a social media training, so I'm excited about that because I've never been to Colorado, and my brother lives there, and I haven't seen him in like 2 years, so that'll be fun.
And Rafflecopter is there, so you'll have to visit.
Yes, I actually sent Greg an email, so I'm hoping to connect with him when I'm up there, too. And then, yes, yeah, so Colorado next week, and then I get to see you in Atlanta in May.
That's right. We'll be at Frank Camp in Atlanta, so anybody that's interested in franchising and social technology, a two-day seminar hosted by the International Franchise Association. And I know our friends that usually are in the chat, Dana Lopez, it's actually attending a social, are you a social media guru session tonight in Arizona that's leading up to the Fran Camp. And he was funny, but he was tweeting saying, Deb, I'm in Arizona and I'm at this event and they're talking about you and Fran Camp. It's like, yeah. Oh. So I just saw a tweet come through from Dana as well saying that he hopes to make it by Geek It Out.
Very cool.
Very good. So we have a guest that I actually met at South by Southwest, introduced by our friend Jean from Charity Miles. And John is with us here. And John, you're calling in from California, aren't you?
Yes, I'm out here in Los Angeles.
You're in Los Angeles. So welcome. It's nice to have you. It was really good to meet you in person and be at South by Southwest, even for just an evening. But why don't you go ahead and tell the audience more about yourself and your project and your digital company. It's all quite fascinating.
Sure, yeah. We actually met at South by Southwest when my nonprofit was a finalist in the category of activism in the Interactive Awards for a project that we launched called Stories From. What the Tiziano Project is, we do new media journalism training in conflict zones. So we go in and teach local community members how to tell their own stories. We'll bring a team of journalists and actually work with a group of local students and teach them everything from journalism fundamentals, how to write an article, interviewing skills, photography, video, and then actually package all that content side by side with work produced by the professional journalists into kind of rich interactive documentaries. And that's actually what we were there for at South by Southwest. We launched this project called Stories From, which was actually an extension of an earlier kind of pilot program that we had done in Iraqi Kurdistan called the 360 Kurdistan. And we actually did that program back in 2010, launched this kind of interactive storytelling website, and it just blew up in a way that like we never expected. It went on to win South by Southwest back in 2010. It won a journalism award, beating CNN and NPR. And we ended up getting a grant to actually develop the stories from platform. So it's just been really an amazing ride doing these programs and helping local community members to tell their own stories.
It's funny, when I met you and you had mentioned your stories from, I'm looking at you and I think, I don't know if you remember, but it's like, wait a minute, I think AK did that or showed us that site one night on our Geek It Out segment, which we'll do at the very end. And it was just, I think I was tweeting you or sending you a text saying, you won't believe it. But we were here at South by Southwest together. It was just one of those, like, I knew I'd heard about it, but I wasn't really sure. So tell us more about, and help me pronounce it again, is it Tiziano?
The Tiziano Project.
Tiziano Project. If that, I was looking at some of those videos and reading through it, and that is just, I'll let you tell the story. How did it get started? It started quite some time ago, did it not?
Yeah, definitely. So we started back in 2007, kind of with the idea of empowering local communities to tell their own stories. It was very much, you know, the time when YouTube had really just started, and the idea of community journalism was really this buzzword that everyone thought could potentially save journalism. So we started, you know, just like a lot of the other organizations getting off the ground, with the idea that we wanted to basically recreate traditional journalism news bureaus around the world, but staffed and run by local community members. We kind of quickly realized that that was a bad idea, because traditional news media is failing. So trying to recreate that model proved very difficult. So we started a lot of community journalism organizations at that point just kind of threw in the towel. But we really started looking at what our students were producing and what kind of stories we wanted to tell and how we could still have an impact. And what we noticed was that a lot of our students most of our students did not want to tell the story that mainstream media was reporting on. They wanted to tell the story the other 98% of their life, which is, you know, not war, not conflict. They wanted to tell stories from, you know, places like Iraq and Afghanistan that you wouldn't see in mainstream media, that could actually help change the perception and the way people think about these communities. So we really refocused, and like I was saying earlier with the project in 2010 in Iraq, when we launched the 360 Kurdistan website, we actually launched that simultaneously with a, you know, more traditional community news website. And the community news website went nowhere. We eventually ended up closing it down. But the, you know, that interactive documentary that gave people a glimpse into Iraq that they would never otherwise see, that really took off. So we've had a great couple years, and then, you know, since we really kind of shifted focus to that, we've done projects in Afghanistan, Kosovo, the West Bank, Latvia, an Apache Indian reservation, and others closer to home, like in Los Angeles and Philadelphia. We've really been kind of all over.
Tell me more about the team that you take with you when you're filming this and meeting with the students and documenting all this. I mean, is this something that you actually dreamed that you would be doing and going into these conflicts and countries and even, you know, in the cities that are repressed and that, you know, it's potentially dangerous to be there?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was never something that I planned to do. It kind of evolved organically. My my background is extremely eclectic. Like, I actually started working in Southeast Turkey, in the Kurdish region of Turkey, as an archaeologist. And I was always kind of an amateur photographer. So I started hanging out with my workmen and, you know, going and visiting the Kurdish villages, and I started taking photographs. And that eventually ended up turning into an exhibit on Kurdish life, and actually started my photojournalism career, where I was actually shooting for the Associated Press for quite some time. And, you know, I was continuing to go back to Iraq as a photojournalist, and I kept really being frustrated with the response that I was getting from my friends each time I would go, which was really like, oh, you know, be careful, it's so dangerous over there, we're so worried about you. And I would always respond the same way. I would say, you know, I feel safer in Iraqi Kurdistan than I do in Los Angeles in the middle of the night. Like, it's really not that dangerous. And so when I met Andrew McGregor, who was getting the Tiziano project off the ground, I definitely I really connected with the idea and wanted to help launch it. And so that's when we started it back in, you know, in 2007. And my whole goal since the beginning has always been to help kind of change these perceptions of these communities. And so the team that we bring, going back to kind of that question, mm-hmm. we always bring a team of professional journalists and documentary filmmakers. They're very well-trained storytellers that go in to teach the local community members how to tell just as high of a quality story. We don't go in and dictate in any way what story they should tell, but we do make sure that the stories that they do tell are produced in a way that, you know, people will want to consume them. So we do help in that way. And then obviously, like I said, all of our mentors also produce content while they're there so that we can really show kind of the 360-degree perspective of these communities.
Very cool. I'm sure some of our guests haven't had the chance yet to look at the site, but when you go, it's so visually stimulating to go through the site and listen to the stories and see the technology that's used. So when you're traveling like that and you're capturing this on video, is it the same when you travel out of the country as you do here, the same type of video machines or equipment, or what makes it different besides the story itself, you know, the technology that you're using, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, the technology is always a challenge. Mm-hmm. So we try to always work as much as possible with our students on the technology that they already have. Most of our students all have, you know, phones to take photographs. They have cameras. They have, you know, computers of some kind, whether or not they're a few years old, and maybe might not be able to handle the most up-to-date software. They have computers. So we definitely always try to make sure that they can use the equipment that they do have. We mm-hmm. also bring in our own equipment, which has gotten a lot easier in more recent years. We definitely used to bring, even early last year, we would bring 2-3 backpacks full of cameras and computers and everything else. Well, in Kosovo, in July of last year, we experimented with our first ever iPad only video workshop. And so the students were actually able to shoot, edit, and publish entirely from the iPad. And that really is a game changer, especially as the prices will eventually continue to go down. Even as it is, you know, the bottom of the line iPad mini is like 300 something bucks. So if you're going to buy, you know, even a Sony point and shoot, you're going to spend 150. And once you start factoring in software and everything else, you're really getting up to the same price has the iPad anyway. So if you bring in a backpack of iPads, A, you save your back because it doesn't weigh 60 pounds. But B, you actually replace the need for a computer lab because you can then meet with your students anywhere and literally work anywhere. And it becomes a lot more, we definitely like when we do bring in our own equipment to leave equipment with the students. And we do that whenever the grants or training contract that we're on allows for it. Things like the iPad definitely make it infinitely more possible to be able to leave equipment behind because you can essentially fund an entire program for like $5,000 in terms of equipment.
Wow. Wow. So tell us more about, the cultural-based stories and how they're received within these projects.
Yeah, I mean, received by outside audiences? Or...
Mm-hmm. Right. Outside audiences as well as where you're actually the stories are taking place. I mean, is there a resistance to being able to... tell this story? I'm assuming no. I mean, it seems like you have a great audience and people that really want to tell their story other than what we see, of war and the conflict, and you get to see the other side of it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the stories, especially with outside audiences, are really, really received well. I always like to give this one example. Going back to Iraq, we were working there, and we put out the website at the end, and it was kind of before we had gotten any of the recognition or anything for it, and we didn't know. It was like putting out these stories into kind of a vacuum. We didn't know how they were being received, if people were liking them. It was really early on from when we released the site, and one day we got a letter from an email from a student, from a college student, an American college student who wanted to go to volunteer in Iraq for the summer. And his parents were obviously like concerned. They didn't want him to go. They thought it was too dangerous. He ended up sending them a link to our 360 Kurdistan website. And in the end, they were not only, they looked at the site for like an hour. And in the end, they were not only excited for him to go, but they wanted to come visit. So, like, that idea of, like, using these stories that would never otherwise get heard, they would never get news coverage, they would never really, make it out of the local community, but getting those stories out to people who would never otherwise hear it really does make a difference. And we also did... It was kind of interesting. We also did a physical exhibit with the Kurdistan Project where we had all of the videos that the student produced up on video screens. And right next to the video, we had a huge blown up photo of each of the students and their bios. And at the opening of it, we even... video conference in one of our students from Iraq to speak to the crowd who had come for the opening. And, hands down, like people came up to me afterwards and were just like, wow, I had no idea that, people like that existed in Iraq, that, this girl who came and who spoke over video conference, I had no idea that, 22-year-old educated girls that speak perfect English even exist there. And so like there really is just this kind of idea that is formed in mainstream audiences because of the coverage that they usually see, that once you can start showing them the other side and showing them that, the Middle East is not a scary place, it really does start to make a difference. And then again, at the local level, I mean, the students really do want to tell these stories. Like when we first go to a project, like we'll tend to brainstorm just the mentors, some story ideas that, we think that the students might be able to report on if they don't come up with any good ones. And every time, like we'll do a story brainstorming session on one of the first days, and they will come up with a list three times as long as ours that's way better and stories that we never would have even known about. And that just happens every time. They want to share their stories.
And I have to admit, I had no idea until you and I met that that this existed. I'm one of those outside audiences that's like just blown away these young girls and even in some of your videos that I watched earlier, older, men and women that want to tell their story, that they. There really is a story to tell. There's another life than what I know of. It really just amazes me.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, our program in Jerusalem, we had students ranging from age 15 to 56, and I mean, they, all of them equally had stories that they wanted to tell and share.
Maybe one of your favorite stories that you have shared.
Oh man, there's so many. I mean, one of the stories that was really powerful to me was we were working in the West Bank and East Jerusalem with Palestinians for several months. There's a very long story that I won't get into about that experience, but if you Google my name and PBS Idea Lab, you can find the full story of our experience in working between Israel and Palestine. It's a very, very challenging place to work. But what we ended up producing in Jerusalem was a program with everyday Palestinian community members who, age 15 to 56, who just wanted to share stories about their community. And one of the girls came to us, she's a 15-year-old girl, and she wanted to tell a story about her friend who was a swimmer at the high school. And, we kind of always give a little bit of leeway at the beginning of a program to students who just want to do a piece on their friends or their family members. It's very safe and comfortable, and it gives them an opportunity to really practice their skills and practice the technology. So we said okay, even though we didn't really expect anything, really powerful to come from it. But what the story ended up being was this 15-year-old girl, her friend, the friend at the high school saying, I'm a 15-year-old girl. Swimming is my life. I've been swimming since I was 9 years old. Swimming is all I ever want to do. There's only one swimmer, one Palestinian swimmer who has really become successful, and he had to go and swim for Israel in the Beijing Olympics. And now all of Palestine and my people hate him. Therefore, as a 15-year-old swimmer, I have no role model. I have no one to look up to. I have no future as a swimmer. And it was just this incredibly powerful story that was just heart-wrenching of, the conflict there. But it was told from a very personal voice that no one can argue with that. It's a 15-year-old girl wanting a future, And so, you can get into conflict at such a more personal level when you just start talking to the community that's actually living these conflicts day to day, and not activists, not, politicians, but just the community members that are affected.
And I have to ask then, I'm trying to figure out, why, how do we tell your story? How do we, if I'm sitting here and then I've got guests that are texting and in the chat and they're saying, they've not heard about this, what can we do to help get the story out there so that we can all see and hear and learn more? Because it's an education. It's something that I'm missing personally. not knowing that this exists.
Yeah, definitely. No, I mean, the main website is storiesfrom.us. That's the platform that we build, storiesfrom.us. And I mean, the best way to do it, there are share buttons on each one of those stories. Go through, spend some time on the site and, you know, find a story that resonates with you and then share it and, you know, get people to start having conversations around these local community stories. And on the site itself, we actually removed the ability to comment on content specifically because we didn't want people to have conversations, one-sided conversations to content. We wanted to actually foster a conversation between these community members and outside audiences. So you actually have to click on the reporter's profile, and then you can talk to the reporter right there using Facebook. So that's, you know, definitely just sharing stories, commenting, talking to the reporters. And then, of course, I have to just give the one plug. We are finalists in the Webby Awards right now. So there will definitely be a link coming out on Twitter that if you get a chance, go vote for Stories From.
Right. And I was going to bring that up, too. So our listeners who are not familiar with the Webby Award, and it's funny, I'm on Facebook today, and I'm seeing all of these folks. I mean, I know we've got some educators that are on, and I think I saw a thing for Sesame Street or one of the software programs that we use. Dr. Seuss, I think, is up for one of the Dr. Seuss programs is up for a Webby. So explain what the Webby Award is, and then when will the final vote, and you know, come about? Because South by Southwest is passed. Is it for next year, South by Southwest?
Sure. Yeah. So the South by Southwest has already passed, but the Webby Awards are essentially like the equivalent of the Academy Awards for the web. They are the big recognition for anyone doing anything in the online space. To win a Webby Award is essentially like the equivalent of winning the Academy Awards. It's really a huge honor. Mm-hmm. And the Webby Awards, once you are nominated, there are literally thousands of entries every year, and I think a few hundred actually reach a nomination. We were nominated for activism this year for Stories From, along with only four other entries. And so now there are two awards that we could win. We can win the jury's choice for activism, or we could win the people's choice for activism. And the people's choice is really, you know, an amazing thing because it's people from around the web saying that this is what they like about the web. So you just have to go onto this one website and vote. We're definitely up against some very tough competition with projects like change.org, which, you know, are amazing and have huge followings. So we're definitely trying to do a grassroots voting effort at this point.
Okay. Give everybody the link again to be able to go vote, and we'll do it again.
Yeah.
At the
so
end.
If you go to PV, which stands for People's Voice, .webbyawards.com, and then go to the category activism. Yep. We will be there.
Good. Yeah. Well, We'll have to share these stories. So there's something at the top of mind here, and I do have a couple questions that I mentioned to you that I had received earlier. So let's go back to one question that our loyal listener Cindy has. She, as you and I had talked about earlier, she's certainly been on the site and she's watched a lot of your videos. She says that she loves the idea of Mr. Belvedere family, connecting with the third world families. How do you select families, and what criteria are you looking for? And then another part of this is, you know, do you stress the differences or the commonalities when you choose these families?
Right. So that was funny that she actually found that. So I've given a lot of talks about storytelling and community storytelling and what the purpose is and what the purpose of what we do is. And one of the talks that I gave that's on the Tiziano Project website at MIT actually included a reference to Mr. Belvedere. I was making a reference to how it's really important to help connect these students to normal, everyday, middle-class families so that, we can really help to change perceptions of these communities, just like I've been talking about. And when I Googled middle-class family to find an image to put into my presentation, Mr. Belvedere was the first one that came up. I figured it had to go in. Of course, like a Mr. Belvedere joke is over, 80% of my target audience's head at this point. But I still love the Mr. Belvedere references. Hello? Hello?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Did we lose Deb?
We might have. Are we still on the radio?
I don't know. Can people hear us in the room? Let's see if people will respond if they can hear us in the chat. Oh, nope. I don't think anybody can hear us in the chat room either.
I lost the echo, which I was having, so I'm assuming we're not connected. Should we try calling back?
We're back. The operator talking in my ear saying, we've had a technical difficulty. Hold on. We're reconnecting you.
Hey,
are you still there too?
Yeah, I'm there.
Amazingly, the echo that I've been hearing the whole time is now gone too. So awesome.
Mm. Oh, I didn't know there was an echo. Okay. sorry. So you're talking about Mr. Belvedere, and we heard that he was.
Oh, right. Yeah. So the Mr. Belvedere was essentially just the need to find an image for a presentation that has kind of stuck now. But really, like, we do spend a good amount of time selecting our students. We actually will partner with organizations on the ground to help identify good students that would make sense for the program. And then we also reach out through social media to target students who we think would be good for the program. And then in terms of, middle-class families that we're trying to reach, we just cast our net far and wide. We're not recruiting those. We're just trying to, send out the website to whoever wants to listen.
Very good. One of the questions that we had that we wanted to ask you is, not only the impact that the projects are having, but on your audience and in your communities, but what about you? The impact it's had on you, and what keeps you motivated to do this work?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I mean, I really have like multiple levels of motivation at this point. The kind of going back to the idea that I've been talking about a few times about changing perceptions, that's really the biggest driver for me in this field, is just that, like, I have friends in Iraq that I consider brothers. I really have a lot of friends and family that we've made in all these programs, and they drive me a lot because I want to continue to help get their stories out. At the local level, in terms of the Tiziano project, it's definitely about job creation. We don't care if our students go on to become journalists. We, love it when they do. But if they, get a job as a wedding photographer, as long as they're bettering their life, that's great. And we have had, we've had pretty good response from our students. I think about 37% of our students have said that they've gotten a job or promotion directly as a result of our training. And almost 70% have said that whether or not it was a direct result, it's definitely opened doors to new paid or unpaid volunteer opportunities. So we've had a really, really great run and success in that way. And then I think just the kind of the third thing is just that I am a storyteller. Like, my background from archaeology, mm-hmm, through to photojournalism, I love to tell stories, and I love to tell stories in kind of the online space. And that's, I've started an interactive agency called Uncharted Digital that is all about that. It's about taking social impact for good projects and figuring out how to take their content and put it online in a way that will connect with people and that people will care about it and be engaged to action from the content. And so really I'm a storyteller at heart. And so I love doing all this kind of work.
Well, it's just so fascinating to me, you know, archaeology. I never really sat and thought about archaeology as a way of telling a story. And it is. And your whole history and the journey that you've been on, I'm awe. It's just so fascinating. And I don't know if I could do it, but it's great. I've got a couple of questions here. People are asking, okay, can we give everybody the link so that they can now learn a lot more of what you're sharing? So we know you've got storiesfrom.us.
Storiesfrom.us is the main site.
And then give it started.
Yep, Uncharted Digital is my interactive agency that we really focus on these storytelling projects online and taking projects from, you know, their conception and building them out. And then TizianoProject.org is the website for Tiziano. It's T-I-Z-I-A-N-O project.org.
Very good. And you're on Twitter?
Yep, I am on Twitter. My handle is John Kaj, J-O-N-K-A-J. And then I also tweet under at Tiziano Project and at Uncharted.
Very good. Well, I highly recommend anyone that's listening either tonight or pulls this up later to go to your website and watch the videos. You've got so many on there, and the stories are just really fascinating. And it certainly was an educated experience for me and certainly for our listeners and our listener, Cindy, that I mentioned earlier and had just digging into your website. But I have a feeling she's going to want to interview you and write a blog post. So you may be hearing from her soon.
Sounds great. I'm happy to do it.
Very good. Now you can hang on and listen. What we do now is a segment of Geek It Out, where AK is going to share some apps and websites and different things. And AK, I apologize. I kind of stifled you, and I know you're there. I didn't put you on mute. But we're going to geek it out, John. Thank you so much for everything that you do and everything that you share with us.
Great. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Very good. So here we go. We're going to do Geek It Out. We get some sound going here. We got to play the song, AK. Here we go. Very good. We've had computer issues. I see in the chat room, AK, that some could hear, some couldn't hear, and some are jumping off the computer and calling in because they don't want to miss the Geek It Out segment.
Okay.
So, but I hear you.
Okay, great.
Okay.
All right. Well, first I want to talk about two apps. And the first one is different for, there's a different app for Android and a different for iPhone. But the purpose is to be able to repost Instagram pictures for other people. And there's a couple of reasons why you may or may not want to do this. You may want to do it just because you really like somebody's picture and you want to reshare it with your audience. I'm using the Android app, of course, because it's my Android phone, and mine's just Insta Repost. I can't remember what the iPhone one is, but I'm sure if you just search in the iTunes for Instagram repost, you can find it. And the nice thing about this is it gives credit to the person who originally posted the picture. So it'll include their username kind of in the bottom, at least on mine, on the Android one, at the bottom of the picture. So you could want to do that. The other reason that you might want to do it is I've been seeing a lot of companies who are on Instagram doing contests or giveaways through Instagram where the method of entry is that you have to repost their giveaway or their contest picture and use some sort of hashtag or include their Instagram handle in the post. And this really confused me because I thought, I don't have a repost button in my Instagram. So I thought maybe it was just Android thing and maybe all of you iPhone users out there had a native repost option in Instagram. Yeah, so I asked somebody who I knew had an iPhone, and they're like, no, we can't do that. So I think it's interesting that businesses are using this, and you have to have a second app in order to participate. But in any case, you do have to have it. I've been seeing these pop up more and more just in the past couple of weeks. So if you do see that, you know that you have to download another app, and there are two, one available for Android, and I don't know, there may be more than one available for iPhone. But yeah, the one I have on Android is called Insta Repost or something to that effect. So that's that. The second app and my true app of the week is called any.do. And you can go to the website to check it out right now. So any.do, and it's a to-do list app. You can do it for Android, iPhone, but it also integrates with Google Chrome, which is one of the features that I really like about it. So I have it on my phone, and I can just do my to-do list on the go. I can actually type it in, or I can speak to it. And then I can set up reminders about when I want it to pop up my phone and remind me to do that, which is really nice because I've used a lot of to-do list apps before, and then I forget to look at my to-do list. So it's really helpful that at that scheduled time when I set the reminder, it will actually pop up across the bottom of my screen. And if I have my volume on, it makes a little ding noise. And you can always dismiss it or kind of snooze button it for, you know, some time later. But I also have it installed in my Chrome. So, for example, when I'm in my Gmail, if I need to follow up with somebody or anything, I have it built into my Gmail now via being built in through Chrome that I can automatically add it to my list, and then it will sync to my phone. And then anything else I'm doing throughout the web, I have the little button up top of my toolbar. So if I'm, you know, on a post and I want to, you know, do something with it later, I can just click that button at the top and automatically do it right through Chrome, and then again, it'll sync to my phone too. And another cool thing is, depending on what you type in, like today I needed to remind myself to schedule my flight to Atlanta. So I did a thing and it said schedule flight, and next to it, a little thing popped up and it said apps. And when I clicked on apps, it brought up all these different options for me to schedule flight. So it's intuitive in that it gives you certain options based on what you typed in. So, totally love it. I'm actually going to blog about it soon on Two Geeky Girls because it's been really, really helpful for me.
Cool. Okay, well, I'll keep that up and I'll download it when we're done.
Yeah, that's AnyDo. But you can also, for other people who use AnyDo, you can share your to-do list as well.
That's even a bonus there. Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay, so yeah, so that's my app of the week. The next site is kind of cool. I actually did put a blog post up on it on Two Geeky Girls, and got a lot of really good feedback about people wanting to do it. I wanted to share it. If you go to folding.stanford.edu, so folding.stanford.edu, the whole site is about the fact that the scientists at Stanford University are trying to study Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and lots of cancer. Protein folding. And evidently, the studies require a gazillion calculations, so they need people to donate their unused computer power. So you can go in and you can, if you scroll down the page, you can watch a video about it, and there's a button where you just click start folding. and you download something and it just runs in the background of your computer. And I was actually worried that it would bog down my computer because I always have like 10 tabs open and I have multiple programs running. And since I've had it installed on my computer, I haven't noticed any difference in my computer speed at all. And it's kind of cool because it gives you progress and it tells you what kind of project it's working on. And you can have teams. So we started a Two Geeky Girls team just to kind of see if we can get a lot of people involved with this project. So
I saw you post it, and then I actually saw Dana repost it. And it too, I haven't downloaded or done anything with it yet because I'm just thinking, what? It's going to take over my computer. It's going to run in the background. So I was scared. So I wanted to hear more from you.
Yeah, I haven't noticed one. I mean, if it was going to bog down my computer, as much as I wanted to help with these studies, I was going to have to undo it because I'm crazy when it comes to anything that slows down my computer. But it hasn't made one bit of difference in the speed or loading of anything since I've been using it. And I've been using it for probably about 2 weeks now. So that's a pretty good thing to run a trial there. So that's it. Let's see. Okay, the next one is to help with search engine optimization when you're writing blog posts or if you're doing a lot of YouTube videos for search engine optimization. The site itself is called wordtracker.com. So wordtracker.com. And it essentially helps you find keywords for your business. So you can kind of stick in ideas that you're thinking about, and it'll give you a whole bunch of keywords. It will tell you how many searches there are. So you would, from this wordtracker.com main page, you would click on the keywords tool. They also have tons of resources about search engine optimization. So making things Google-friendly, looking at long-tail keywords, figuring out what keywords your competitors are using, all sorts of stuff. They have reports and all kinds. So I've actually been using this. I'm reading the book by the guy who runs the Pro Blogger website. I think his name's Darren. Gosh, I'm going to draw a line, but it's Darren.
Is it Ross?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, the book is called The Pro Blogger Tips for Making a Six-Figure Income from Blogging or something. And this was one of the tips that was recommended in the book. So I've been using it. So I think you get a free trial, but then you have to pay. So I've been doing a free trial, and I'll have to decide whether I'm going to keep it up after the.
Yeah, it's Darren Ross, R-O-W-S-C. I thought it was.
Yeah.
I'll have to get that book. Okay. Very cool.
Okay, so that's Word Tracker. And the next one is actually something else I got from the Pro Blogger book, which is an interesting concept and something I hadn't thought of, and I didn't know this type of site existed. It's called Flippa, F-L-I-P-P-A, Flippa.com. So F-L-I-P-P-A.com. And it's the number one marketplace for buying and selling websites.
Ooh, I think Dana's listening to this one.
It's actually kind of addictive because you're looking at these and it tells you, like if you click on them, it will tell you how much income is coming into the site. So some of them, you can look at it and they'll tell you like it's generating $2,200 worth of income a month and the price just to buy the site is like $1,500. So then you have to look at the URL and look at the site and figure out if you could maintain it and, you know, kind of keep the current income coming in. But I think it's just fascinating to look at the URL. That's how geeky I am. I just like to look at the URLs and the types of sites that people are selling and, you know, kind of figure out, like, there's one on here now, much.com, selling for $1,550. And I'm like, well, you could do a lot of stuff with much.com. I don't know, it's kind of cool just to look through, and it tells you, you know, how many sites are selling, and, you know, people are bidding on the sites, and, I mean, you could sell a website if you wanted to. The Pro Blogger, especially for bloggers, of course, the Pro Blogger book has a great chapter on trying to figure out how much your site is worth if you did want to sell it. But it's fun. You can look at, you know, just sold, or you can look at featured sites, and kind of neat.
Very neat. Very good. Okay.
You still
have some more? I mean, we've got time, but, you know, it's up to you.
Yeah, I have two more, so I can keep going.
Okay. I still have a room for open those URL.
I've been saving them up since our week off last week.
Oh, that's right.
So this one is called namecontest.com. So just the word name and then contest.com. So you can, as it says here on the site, you can hold private or public naming contests. And it's basically naming contests for anything. So if you wanted to, if you were working on a new blog, or which would have been really helpful for Sarah and me because it took us months to come up with our blog name. So if you think it's creative, that's why. If you don't think it's creative, then it really just took us that long to come up with something not creative. Anyway, but you could do brand names, but you can also do like pet names or baby names, or but you can do slogans. If you're writing a book, you can do naming contests for book names.
Ooh. Oh.
So it's a fun little platform. So, you know, some of it's really fun. You can come through here and you can participate and, you know, you can do entries and things like that, like name my parrot, but name ideas for a gift shop is cool too. So I think it would be neat to, like, participate in these, and especially if it was like a store or a brand and they went with your idea, that would be kind of cool.
I'm getting some jokes and text messages about what you can name. I'm not going to share that or sell. Okay. We have
all right. The last one I have here is in beta. So there aren't, once I tell you what it is, there aren't a lot of options, but I think it's an interesting concept, and I kind of want to keep my eye on it and see where it goes. It's called Cubies, I guess. It's CUBIEZ.com.
The C is in.
Yeah, CUB is in boy, IEZ is in zebra.com.
Okay.
Okay, so the premise is on your phone, you go through your phone and you have all of your little square app buttons that you can choose from. And what this site is trying to do is sort of bring that concept to your desktop. So I installed it and I was able to add apps. And when it adds my apps, I'm on a PC, I have my little Windows Start button in the lower left-hand corner, and then I was able to add 5 apps. And it looks just like your little kind of square app buttons on your phone, but I have one for Facebook, I have one for Google Maps, one for weather, a calculator, and one for images. And I just click on it, and this little kind of half window pops up, and I can see the weather, or I can quickly get driving directions, or quickly access my Facebook without going through a whole bunch of tabs and all sorts of different stuff. So it is only for Windows right now. You have to download it for Windows. And it didn't have Twitter. It didn't have LinkedIn. The only social network that it has right now is Facebook, so that's how new it is. But I just think it's an interesting concept. You wouldn't want to have a system.
It's interesting, but you know what I think I would end up doing? I would want to touch my screen.
Oh, yeah.
Because I sit here with my iPad sitting next to the PC, and I'm making myself crazy because I have to go from the mouse to the iPad to touch the screen, and I constantly am hitting my laptop screen, and it won't do anything. Well, it's like, duh, it's not a touch screen.
Yeah.
So I think I would do that if I have. But you do have to talk to us, too, about the new Facebook feature that somehow you got. And so many of us in our little Social Geek Radio tribe did not.
The new Facebook feature I got, which
it's
is
not that new. As Dana pointed out.
Apparently, it was talked about and unrolled in January, but
yeah.
It was a slow rollout. And, I hadn't seen anybody post with it. Yesterday evening, Sarah and I were actually doing some work done together, and she could see my screen. And I went into Facebook, and it says, you know, tell us what you're doing. And it's this little pop-up, and I could click on it, and I could say if I – and it's right in my status box. So underneath mm-hmm. your mind, now in addition to all the options I have under there, I have a little smiley face. And if I click on that, it says, what are you doing? And I can pick from how I'm feeling, what I'm watching, reading, listening to, drinking, or eating. And then when you click on each of those, they have their own breakdowns. And then there's an emoticon or a little icon that goes next to each one. And then when, depending on what you pick, you could change the little emoticon. And then it shows up in your profile. Like last night I was reading a book by Jillian Michaels, and it just said, AK is reading, and it has a little picture of the book, Swim for Life by Jillian Michaels. So it's interesting, and I didn't read it, but Dana said that he said Mashable had an article about it yesterday. So I'm sure you guys can, you know, look that up for more information. So I'm not sure, really sure what the point is. I think they wanted to maybe, you know, make it easier for people to share stuff or bring more emotion to the site, or they're getting so popular on Twitter that people use them on Facebook.
But I do like, and you did get this like a day before I got it on my Facebook business page, is the replies that you can do in the Facebook status bar. I keep forgetting to hit reply, and I just put it in the status bar as a comment, and then I want to go in and I want to delete it. It's like, okay, you know, it's got this reply. But I haven't seen, I'm looking at other Facebook business pages too to see how active it is. I like it. It's going, I think it'll take off. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. I've forgotten to as well, and I'm assuming even when I forget to hit reply that people are still getting notifications like usual. The one interesting thing that I did notice about it is somebody writes on my page and I hit reply and then they reply to me, I am not getting notifications if they reply back to me. I noticed on one of my pages today I was just kind of looking through the posts and people were replying and I didn't know. And condenses the reply thread. So I actually had to go in and it'll say like two replies and I had to click on it for it to pull up what I had originally replied to and then their reply to me. So I don't know how I feel about the condensing part of it. I think that, you know, because I'd like everybody else to see the replies too. I don't want them to have to take an extra step when it gets condensed. So I don't know. The verdict's still out on that one for me.
Okay. Well, and I love it. You know, you go into Facebook and there's something new. Do you know of anything else that's coming out that you can share with us so that we're not surprised?
The thing I've heard about is that the news feed is changing.
Right.
So that's supposed to be like a six-month rollout period, and you're supposed to be able to filter the way you view your news feed. And apparently page feeds from business pages are going to be in a completely separate filter all by themselves called following. So businesses are worried that people just won't click on that feed and that, you know, the amount of posts that people see from your business will actually decrease. So I don't know, maybe they're working on fixing that or...
Well, there's something with it because remember it came to mind and it totally messed up my whole Facebook and then I had to... Yeah, and I wasn't compatible with Chrome, and I had these issues, and I was texting you and sending Shelly Roth questions. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
So I'm back to the regular, which, thank God, because I was going nuts, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they seem to be having a lot of stuff in the works right now.
Yeah, very good. All right, so Blog Talk Radio Operator, once again, is about to wrap up. So thank you very much, and thanks again to John for joining us tonight and everybody that was sending questions in the chat. And AK, have a very safe trip, and I want a picture of you and Greg.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Social media, social media, social media.